What we need to know, what we're going to discuss here tonight, is talking about Bill 10 and gay-straight alliances, really what that is. That was the end of 2014 and into March 2015. Bill 10 was in the news, so what exactly was that? Bill 7, a bill just passed recently. We're going to talk about the Alberta School Act, the Human Rights Act, and now these guidelines and best practices, which was a 16-page document that the province released in January. Okay, so this is some of the things we're going to be talking about. So what's Bill 202? In 2014, Lori Blakeman, who's an Edmonton MLA, member of the Alberta Liberal Party, introduced Bill 202. And Bill 202 sought to make gay-straight alliances mandatory in schools that requested, or schools where students had requested them. So this was much controversy in this private member's bill, especially from the Roman Catholic Church and Catholic school boards. So what exactly is the GSA? I want to talk about what is the GSA, you know, because she went and introduced this Bill 202 wanting to make GSAs mandatory. So what exactly is the GSA? A GSA is a gay-straight alliance. They started in the United States, and really they're a movement that's seeking to advocate for gay rights. It was started by a group called GLESEN, G-L-S-E-N, Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. And they're designed to advocate for the full acceptance of homosexuality, bisexuality, and transgenderism in our schools, engaging young children to declare themselves as gay in the safety of a gay-straight alliance. Part of the purpose of a gay-straight alliance, and this is a description from the Gay-Straight Alliance Network, it says they're an activist club seeking to get lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning LGBTQ issues in the curriculum, LGBTQ-related books in the library, and progressive non-discrimination policies implemented as on a district level. That's a quote from their from who they are in terms of this network that's advocating for gay-straight alliances. GSAs are encouraged, or those who participate in a gay-straight alliance are encouraged to organize a Pride Week or an LGBTQ awareness event or participate in the Day of Silence. This is a Day of Silence protesting against homophobia. Also, and I quote, GSAs, this is from their same website, this Gay-Straight Alliance Network. They say, GSAs organize a Teach the Teachers Staff Development Day, which focuses on teaching school staff how to be better allies for LGBTQ students. And so students in these gay-straight alliances are encouraged to access a variety of different websites, such as glsen.org, and designed to aid them and to help them be organized to carry out some of these goals at a school, not to affect the curriculum and then the environment. Their goal is to make an impression on those young people who are the most impressionable. Now, this picture that you see on the screen is actually from Alberta, from the Alberta Teachers Union, Teachers Association. Now, they have created a 64-page manual. You can get this online and read it, and it gives students a whole roadmap on how to set up and how to organize a GSA in order to transform education and to lobby for LGBTQ lifestyles so they're seen as normal and to celebrate them. And so this manual, if you were to read this, we're not going to touch it tonight, is 64 pages, and it'll be just as eye-opening as the guidelines. Also in this 64-page manual, there's also a page dedicated on how to set up a GSA in Catholic schools and another page on getting them going in other faith-based schools. They want this in every single school, and that was really what Bill 202 was all about. So going back to Bill 202, the PC government at the time, in response to Bill 202, introduced Bill 10. Now, when they introduced Bill 10, those who advocated for GSAs didn't like their version of Bill 10 because they said a student can request a GSA, but the ultimate authority remained with the school board and with the parents. And if students found this unfair, they could take this issue up in court. And so this was not received well by those who lobbied for GSAs. And so I just want to include here some of the quotes that were spoken in the legislature at that time when Bill 10 was first introduced by the Conservative government, and really what the underlying issue was. This is from December 1st, 2014. Rachel Notley, our current premier, she says, "How can you claim to be a protecting children when your government puts pandering to social conservatives ahead of child and youth safety?" Okay, so this is her claim that the Conservatives was pandering to social conservatives in their version of Bill 10. Gordon Dirks, then the education minister, said, "In Alberta schools, what I have at present is 637 anti-bullying clubs, 665 diversity clubs, and 94 gay-straight alliances, okay? Because these GSAs are supposed to promote, are supposed to eliminate bullying in our schools. And so these are the current clubs we have in our schools across the province. Kent Hare, who is a Liberal MLA, now a federal MP in the Trudeau cabinet, he said at the time, how many gay-straight alliances, not just diversity clubs, exist in our rural areas and our Catholic and private school systems. And you see what they desire, and it's right from the minutes from their discussion, is they want these GSAs mandatory, not just diversity clubs, but specifically gay straight alliances, and they want them in not only the city schools but also in the rural areas, Catholic and other private school systems. Also from Kent Hare, he says, does the Minister of Education support mandatory gay-straight alliances at every school where students request them? Or is he going to continue to bow down to some argument on parental rights or nonsense like that instead of doing what's right? Okay, so they think that an argument that says, well, leave the decision up to parents or to school boards is nonsense. And so ultimately, the Conservative government at the time caved to those pressures. Bill 10 was passed in a matter of hours on March, in the middle of March in 2015, and it was revised to allow to make gay-straight alliances mandatory in every school where a student requested them, no matter what. And so what exactly is in Bill 10? Exactly that. GSAs are mandatory. If a student requests one in any Alberta school, it must be put in place. If someone on the school board or the staff does not want to do it, then the education minister will then appoint an adult to lead that gay-straight alliance in that particular school. Also, Bill 10 also changed the Alberta School Act. It was amended and says a board has responsibility to ensure that each student enrolled in a school operated by the board and each staff member employed by the board is provided with a welcoming, caring, respectful, and safe learning environment that respects diversity and fosters a sense of belonging. Okay, and we can agree to that. Also, it amended the Alberta School Act and said this, a board shall establish, implement, and maintain a policy respecting the board's obligation to provide a welcoming, caring, respectful, and safe learning environment that includes the establishment of a code of conduct for students that addresses bullying behavior. And this is where really these guidelines come in, because it is now law that a board has such a policy to respect all kinds of people. And so now these guidelines are put in place to as an implementation of this law. The School Act was also amended and said the code of conduct must, so this policy that each school board must develop, must be made publicly available, must be reviewed every year. It contains the following elements, including one or more statements that address the prohibited grounds of discrimination set out in the Alberta Human Rights Act. And so these policies must provide statements and that are going to show how they're going to protect those different peoples that are listed in the Alberta Human Rights Act. Bill 10 also amended the Alberta Human Rights Act by adding not only that you can't discriminate by reason of race, national origin, color, or religion, or sex, they also added sexual orientation. So now that's part of our laws here in Alberta. Bill 7, which came after Bill 10 was passed. Bill 7 passed in November 2015 during the first session of our new NDP government, and they changed the Alberta Human Rights Act to add gender identity, and gender expression. Again, as in grounds that you could not discriminate anyone, and that must also be included in each and every school board's policies on how they're going to prevent bullying to these kinds of people. Now we come to our current education minister, Egan. So up to this point, Bill 10 and Bill 7 have been passed. It's now law that each and every school board must have a policy to prevent bullying of LGBTQ students. And so November 15, with our newly minted education minister, he notified all the school boards and said that they must submit, each school board must submit to the government their policy that shows how they're going to deal with LGBTQ students according to the new rules, according to the new laws, and he gave them a submission deadline at the end of March 2016, so coming up here in a few weeks. Thanks, Daniel. And apparently, he says that some school boards wanted guidance on this, and that's why the Alberta government published these guidelines. And so here we have these guidelines that we're going to be discussing here in the next few minutes. And so you can see by these guidelines and by the first page that is included with the Alberta government logo right on it, there's no subtlety involved in what's going on here. These guidelines are meant to encourage and promote and to celebrate the LGBTQ movement and those people involved in it. Okay? So, what's in the guidelines? We're going to look at the guidelines here quickly. First quote from the guidelines, page number one. You can flip there or you can just look on the screen, either way. First page, it says, we want to, or it's designed for creating an education system that is truly inclusive. It requires all schools to identify and implement evidence-based strategies that ensure the safety, belonging, and full participation of all members of the school community. Now, they mentioned this word evidence-based a number of times in their document. Sadly, there's not much evidence presented in their document. I just want to give a few pieces of evidence. In terms of evidence-based, there is a table at the back where they cite some material that they've gathered for this study, for this policy. They name a number of advocacy groups, also other ideological bureaucrats and special interest lobby groups in the teachers' union. So they don't really consult anyone who actually disagreed with anything that they have written here. I just want to mention a few things in terms of evidence that we want to be considering here tonight as we look at evidence-based strategies for homosexuality and transgenderism. One, the American Psychiatric Association continues to list transgenderism as a psychiatric disorder. It's called gender dysphoria, and that's still in their manuals today. Second piece of evidence, Dr. Ken Zucker, he was a clinical lead at the Gender Identity Service at Toronto Centre for Addiction and Mental Health, and he helped many families treat their children's gender identity disorder, also known as gender dysphoria. John Hopkins University, which made headlines because they were the first school and hospital to do the first gender reassignment surgery, and they've now stopped the practice. They've deemed it harmful and resulting in numerous suicides. They now advise people to learn to embrace their actual gender. And they've stopped this. And this again, we don't hear about this in our news today. In cities and schools where, and even shelters, where these kind of policies that we're going to look at tonight have been put in place, there have been cases, accounts of assault and voyeurism. In response, the bathroom bill, the idea of letting either gender use whatever bathroom based on your self-identification, it's been repealed in Houston. And it's been repealed in different schools that it's been implemented in. And it's currently under appeal in California, state of California, because of a number of problems that it's causing. Most children, another piece of evidence, most children who experience gender confusion as a youth grow out of it. We used to call them tom girls or tomboys, but they're now encouraged to remain in that expression as a child. Medical services, like doctors, when you give blood or stem cells or bone marrow, they refuse to allow homosexuals to donate because of the risk of diseases like HIV. And again, this is not being told to our children. Speaking of HIV, there's a high risk among homosexual men. This continues to today. For transgenderism, medically and genetically, scientifically, evidence-based, every single cell in your body is either two X chromosomes or an X and a Y. You're either a male or you're a female, genetically, scientifically. Multiple studies of genetically identical twins have proven that neither gender dysphoria or homosexuality is genetic. Numerous cases of twins, one is a homosexual, one is not, demonstrates that this is not a genetic issue. Not only that, now we have all this evidence against this LGBTQ movement, but even against Bill 10. There's a policy, these policies stand in contradiction to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Article 26 there says that parents have a prior right to choose the kind of education that shall be given to their children, and Bill 10 seeks to undermine that. We also have Article 18.4 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which guarantees or requires that government to respect the liberty of parents to ensure the religion and moral education of their children is in conformity with their own convictions. In March 2015, if you saw on the news, there was an issue in Quebec. Quebec was trying to make all the schools in their jurisdiction teach their ethics and religious culture course. And then Loyola, a high school, a Catholic high school, took the matter to court, and they ended up winning at the Supreme Court by not having to carry out this province-wide curriculum because it was right against their Catholic beliefs. Now, it was a close call in the Supreme Court. It was 4-3. And so we can't rely on the courts to always bail out some of these things. So these are some of the evidence that is out there. And this is some of the evidence that is completely ignored and washed away, and they claim that these policies are evidence-based strategies when they're ignoring all the evidence. What else is in this document? In the guidelines contains 12 major best practices, which are a call to action, they say. Each section includes a short description and then a number of indicators of what this is going to look like. And again, these guidelines are given as a means to fulfill the changes to the law that Bill 10, the changes to the School Act, changes to the Alberta Human Rights Act. And so these policies are a demonstration of what it looks like to be faithful to those new laws. So the first one that they have in their guidelines, providing supports that respond to a student's individual needs. And this one, they say that teachers should encourage students to start gay-straight alliances. This is the very first one, wanting GSAs in all of our schools. So also from page 5, it says, no student or family should be referred to programs which purport to fix, change, or repair a student's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. Now, we just saw the APA still lists this as a psychiatric disorder. We saw that people have been treated for this disease. And we also saw that Johns Hopkins University, who started this, has since stopped. But again, our government is saying that no one should refer, not even a family member, should refer someone to get this idea fixed, changed, or repaired. The second thing they have in the guidelines, respecting an individual's right to self-identification. Okay, for the purpose of accommodating the diverse needs of students and staff in school, an individual's self-identification is the sole measure of their sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. Okay, what someone thinks about themselves, that is the sole measure. There's no other criteria. No hormone levels, no gender reassignment surgery, no, you've got your name changed with the government, nothing. Just your self-identification is the sole measure of someone's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. And this point also encourages students to pick their own name, use their own pronouns like Z, Zer, Her, Mix, instead of Mr. or Mrs. And the staff and other students all must comply. And so if someone decides that they've changed their name, that they've changed their gender, based on just their own prerogative, staff and other students must obey their wishes. And all this information, if someone has chosen a certain set of pronouns, chosen a name, chosen a gender identity, none of this information can be told to the parents unless, it says here in the policy, unless the student gives explicit permission. Okay? And so this is supposed to be kept under wraps unless a student gives their explicit permission to tell their parents. Again, undermining of parental rights. Number three, third policy or guideline in these guidelines, maintaining school records in a way that respects privacy and confidentiality. School staff ensure the consistent use of the student's chosen, that is, preferred name on school-based documents, such as report cards and other school correspondence. So again, you can choose your name and your pronoun, your gender, and that will reflect on your documents at school if you so wish. And also students can say, no, I want to be called this at school, and I want these names in my documents because I don't want my parents to find out, and the school must comply to those wishes. Number four, guidelines say ensuring dress codes respect an individual's gender identity and gender expressions. Okay, so rules apply equally and fairly to all students and are not gender exclusive, such as implying that a certain type of clothing, such as skirts, will be worn by one gender only. And so because those who are transgender don't want to feel bullied by having either male clothing or female clothing, whether that's a school uniform or such, then the guidelines suggest that all clothing be gender neutral, and that you should not have girls in skirts or boys in pants, because that might cause someone to feel uncomfortable. So in that case, all of the protocol, the rules for a school uniform should be gender neutral, something that boys and girls all wear together. And so again, this is supposed to prevent bullying, but ends up applying a heavy-handed rule to every single school, every single school board, and every single child in that school. Some of you, I know many of you, went to school with a dress code that was different from boys and girls, but they're suggesting that that law no longer applies. Number five in the guidelines, minimizing gender-segregated activities. Not only we don't want gender-specific clothing, but we don't want activities. And so the guidelines say that we should reduce gender-segregated activities to the greatest extent possible. Okay, this is talking about athletic, talking about academic, it's talking about talent competitions, that these should not be segregated by gender, okay, to the greatest extent possible. Number six in the guidelines, enabling students with diverse sexual orientations, gender identities, and gender expression to have full, safe, and equitable participation in curricular and extracurricular activities. Okay, so if sports teams are divided by gender, the guidelines say, students are given the opportunity to participate on the team that reflects their gender identity and expression. So if a young boy, based on the sole measure of his gender is his self-identification, decides to be a girl, he can play on the girls' sports teams. No questions asked. That's between him and him alone to make that decision. And so, of course, this certainly won't be abused by anyone in high school, because you know that all the people in high school act very mature and won't abuse kind of rules like this, okay? And parents with daughters, I'm sure that you're excited that there could be boys playing on your girls' teams. And we have to remember that a person's self-identification is their sole determiner of someone's gender expression or gender identity. They just have to say, I am a woman. They don't have to dress like a woman. They can just say that, I am a girl. And they can play on the girls' team or extracurricular activities. Number seven, providing safe access to washroom and change room facilities. Okay, page number eight, students are able to access washrooms that are congruent with their gender identity. Okay, so if a young boy says, I am a girl today, he can use the girls' washroom. Page nine says, a student who objects to sharing a washroom or change room with a student who is trans or gender diverse is offered an alternative facility. Okay, so a boy who says that he is a woman can go into the woman's washroom, and if there are girls in there, like I imagine most girls are uncomfortable with that, well, another washroom will be provided for them. They're the ones that are going to have to move and go to an alternate facility. So again, these girls who are, for the sake of their own modesty, propriety, their own safety, are being bullied to find an alternate facility rather than using the girls' change room. Now, the first quote on page 8 says washroom, the second one says change room, and this section talks about how both washrooms and change rooms, an individual can choose which one they go into based on their gender identity. The document also says it includes field trips, it includes traveling for competitions. Again, a person's sole measure of their gender identity is their choice of what gender they are. Number eight, providing professional learning opportunities that build capacity to staff to understand and support diverse sexual orientations, gender identities, and gender expressions. Okay? Again, this, trying to foster an idea of diversity in terms of sexuality, in terms of gender. So page 11 says school authorities develop and maintain mutually supportive relationships with a variety of sexual and gender minority groups who can share resources and expertise. You know, an example of this is having someone who is transgender, having someone who is gender diverse, or someone who is homosexual to come in front of the children, in front of the class, and begin to speak about their experiences and such. It's to really build these learning opportunities for both students and the staff to understand these gender minority groups. Okay? Now again, no facts or evidence are consulted in this process, just people's experience. Number nine from the guidelines, using a comprehensive whole school approach to promote healthy relationships and prevent and respond to bullying behavior. Okay? Page number 12 says staff use comprehensive whole school approaches to foster social, emotional, learning, and healthy relationships in order to reduce the likelihood of bullying behavior, including homophobic and transphobic bullying. Okay, what they're getting at here is a comprehensive whole school approach means that they desire through, whether that's the curriculum, whether that's through other discussions, activities, events, artwork, drama, to include curriculum and ideas about the LGBTQ community so that no one is homophobic, so no one is transphobic. So this is just normal, celebrated life. Now, parents do, and we're going to see this, parents do still have the right to opt out of their children from religious or sexual education. But they don't have the right to opt out of this, because this is speaking of, this whole school approach, comprehensive approach, is speaking of not sexuality. It's speaking of family diversity and diversity of people and these protected freedoms in our Alberta Human Rights Act. And so there is no ability to opt out of things like this. An example of this comprehensive whole school approach is reading books to preschoolers or to kindergartens, to grade ones, that introduce them to books where instead of having a mom and dad in this book, there'll be two fathers in the book, there'll be two mothers, or there'll be transgendered characters. And all of this is said to foster familiarity to prevent homophobia or transphobia. Number 10 from the guidelines. It also states that ensuring students have the understanding, skills, and opportunities to contribute to welcoming, caring, respectful, and safe learning environments that respect diversity and nurture a sense of belonging and a positive sense of self. Okay, they're big on the positive sense of self and self-identification. Page 12 says, staff and parents play important roles in shaping school culture, but for meaningful and lasting change to occur, students must be an integral part of the process. And as you read through this document, really, it's wanting to put more and more power and freedom and rights to the students rather than to parents. They're seeking to change the mind of the students so they embrace this brave new world in terms of our human sexuality and human gender rather than the old forms that we know as parents. Number 11. Ensuring all families are welcomed and supported as valued members of the school community. And that sounds great, but this is what they mean by it. On page 14, school forms, websites, letters, and other communications should use non-gendered and inclusive language. That is, instead of saying mother and father, it should say parents and guardians, caregivers, families, partners, student, or their. Instead of, okay, these should be removed from the forms, Mr., Mrs., mother, father, him, her, etc. Okay, so no longer should refer to parents as mother and father, but rather caregivers or just parents, because we don't want to be discriminatory by using a term like mother or father. The last one here I don't have a slide for is number 12, and it's just ensuring that school staff have work environments where they are protected from discrimination based on sexual orientations, gender identities, and gender expressions. Okay, it should be standard fare in the schools that teachers as well as students should be supported in this lifestyle. They don't want what's happening where a staff member is fired either in a Christian Catholic school because they've come out as a homosexual or transgendered. If that was to happen, that would be a violation of their human rights. And so they're talking about here protecting those kinds of things by caring for teachers as well as the students. So the question becomes, is this mandatory? You know, this policy seems out there, but is this mandatory? So this is some conversations I've had with different MLAs in the city. First one is from Christina Steed. She's a constituency manager for Richard Godfrey, an MLA down in Calgary Fish Creek. And he says the guidelines are just that, guidelines. Okay? It's up to interpretation, okay? Just guidelines. Brandy Payne, our local MLA right here in Calgary, Acadia, she says these guidelines will assist educators as they work to accommodate their students in situations that they have not previously encountered. They are not legally binding. And it's at this point where many people communicating with their MLAs breathe a sigh of relief. Okay, this is not going to affect me or my family or my school. Phew. Now, contacting the Calgary Board of Education, this is from Julie, and I'm going to butcher her last name, but I tried to say it, but she says, I am not sure if you are aware, but the Calgary Board of Education is obligated under the law to create an LGBTQ policy by March 31st, 2016. And she's correct. They are obligated under law to create an LGBTQ policy. That's exactly what Bill 10 and Bill 7 said. And so by saying that these guidelines are just that, guidelines, is a bit erroneous, because these guidelines are an example of what it's going to look like when you actually implement Bill 10 and Bill 7. No, a school board doesn't need to accept every single line and suggestion in these policies, but each and every one of the policies that a school board crafts gets submitted to the government, and they're using this as a standard in order to evaluate that to see whether you've satisfied the requirements of the law that Bill 10 and Bill 7 put in place. And so this is a good example of what they desire in each and every school board, and what kind of things we're going to be approving as school boards submit those guidelines or policies. What about the Calgary Board of Education? Some of you might have children in the Calgary schools. This is from Julie again. She says the CBE is considered a leader in the province when it comes to supporting LGBTQ students. She gave me information to go online to their website, read their FAQs to parents, and this is one of them that reads, "What will these new guidelines mean for my school and my child? The provincial guidelines are very much in line with our current CBE practices. Very little will change as a result of these guidelines. We are already supporting students, families, and staff in a manner consistent with the guidelines." So our Calgary schools are already doing all this. Now, this is nothing new. If you have a child in a Calgary school, this is from the school board trustee. They already have these things implemented. This is nothing new for them. What about other school boards? All of the school boards, whether they're Catholic, whether it's a charter school, whether it's a private school, Christian school, they all must adopt similar policies, LGBTQ policies, and they're going to be reviewed by our provincial government, and they must submit those by the end of March. Some of those school boards have said, we will not do it. They are going to practice civil disobedience and refuse to obey the government. And as we see this get closer and closer to that date, that's my prayer that more and more school boards will just say, no, we are not going to put these kinds of things into our schools and our school policies. The question becomes, can I opt out? Can I say I don't want any part of this in our schools? Again, this is from Brandy Payne, our local MLA. She says the policies do not impact Alberta curriculum or the Alberta Bill of Rights, which gives parents the ability to withdraw their children from instruction about human sexuality or from instruction or exercises that are primarily and explicitly religious or patriotic in nature. Okay? And so again, she's trying to affirm parents that it's okay, you can opt out. But the truth is, you cannot opt out of any of these things that are going to be in the schools, because this is not a matter of human sexuality. It's not sexual education. It's not talking about religion. Rather, these are talking about basic human rights. These are family diversity that you must embrace. And so transgenderism, homosexual marriage, is not seen as primarily or explicitly about human sexuality, and therefore you have no ability to opt out of what Bill 10 mandated as law. So what must we do? Here's the suggestions. May 14th, 2016, there's a rally at the legislature. A number of people are being organized. A group called Parents for Choice are organizing this rally. It's a Saturday going up to legislature. There's a petition on the back table, a number of sheets that you can go and sign, you fill out, and they'll be bringing these petitions to the legislature on that same weekend. I encourage you to contact your MLA, your school board, the Minister of Education, the Premier, just with concerns. And those number of evidences that I laid out near the beginning, I've sent to our MLAs, to our Premier, to our Education Minister, saying, you know, do any of our policies consider these facts as we make laws and policies? And again, they respond with boilerplate emails, but we need to continue to follow up and so that they know this is an issue. Ultimately, our confidence is not in the government changing their mind, but hopefully we can make enough noise that this becomes an election issue, that other political parties would take onto this and say, if we get elected in the next election, we'll repeal Bill 10, we'll repeal Bill 7, and we'll set schools in terms of putting the authority back to the school boards and to the parents rather than the government. I also encourage you to share these guidelines and encourage others to take action. Share this presentation when it's available online, and you can visit parentchoice.ca for more information.